Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
This is Mary.
This is Doug.
And this is Wayne.
All right, so we are going to do another episode of the Tungsten GM, so we're rolling off on initiative. Then I'll give the prompt. Ooh, I'm going last. I got a 1.
I got a 7.
9. 6.
Wow.
Okay, so it's going to be Wayne, Mary, Doug, then me.
Wow, with a
nothing
9.
Under 10, or
yeah,
over 10.
Winning on a 9. Okay, we got some real low achievers here, I say as I'm sitting in front of a 1. Or behind it? I guess it feels more like a 1 is something you're behind, not in front of. You're in front of a 20. I don't know why that matters, but just those prepositions seem to matter. All right, so the prompt that we're looking at for today's episode is a mechanical circus, all right? So a purely clockwork circus that goes from place to place of its own volition and seems, at least, and maybe legitimately is, it's up to the GMs to decide, but seems to be providing help, sustenance, and entertainment wherever it goes, as well as a welcome distraction. That's as far as we're going with the prompt. So, Wayne, you're our initiative winner. So go ahead, tell me about your game that involves a clockwork circus.
Our players are colonists on a space colony out there. They don't know if there's any other humans left in existence. They may be the last ones for all they know. Life is rough. And this circus shows up. It has clockwork clowns and clockwork games going on, all of this. One of the things they find is a picture booth. And on the side, there's pictures of different species aliens, but humans as well. And this brings hope. You know, they have fun with it. They don't know what's going on. They never see anybody that is alive. Everything is all clockwork. It doesn't talk to them outside of barking out the usual things that you would have, you know, step up, step right up, and things like that.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Literal carnival barking.
Exactly.
Yes, okay.
And then it goes away. Then it comes back. And this carnival comes back every 6 months. And each time it does, there's new pictures by the booth of other humans out there somewhere. But they don't know where this is coming from. They don't know where it's going. They have never met an alien, but there are alien pictures being taken as well. And the prizes for the games, there's dollies, but the dollies are, some of them are human, some of them are alien species.
Oh, I like this. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what's the punchline? Where's all this headed?
Punchline would be advanced alien race that is keeping tabs on various colonies of different species throughout the galaxy by sending this carnival out. It's gathering information from them, listening to everything that they say while they're in the carnival,
yeah,
and spying on them, taking pictures, keeping track on each of these different colonies that it's visiting over this time.
So if the players tried to collect information or learn more about the universe by taking apart this carnival, or at least attempting to, you know, take a crowbar to the photo booth and see what else is in there, look at the pictures of the other aliens to learn something about their physiology.
Yes, they could learn things. They could find seriously advanced technology lying under the clockwork technology.
I like it.
Yeah.
All right. Mary at a 7.
Okay, so the clockwork carnival comes to town, and it is a frontier kind of setting where you have lots of small towns dotted across the landscape. They are very independent. There's not a lot. It's pretty bleak landscape. These are either mining towns or a lot of sustenance existence, which makes this carnival, when it shows up, one of the great relief for spirit and mind. Like, just, this is pure enjoyment, pure entertainment, in a way that you don't usually see in life in a frontier town. And players are one of the inhabitants of one of these towns in a normal life. And when the carnival leaves this time, and it shows up every year or two, and it makes the rounds of towns, and you can follow it between towns, but they notice that this time there's a little girl who dies, and it seems to be an accidental death. but something about it they think is connected to the carnival. And if they follow the carnival, they will find out that every, say, few months, somebody else dies in relation to this carnival. It's usually a different town. It's never more than one person in a town, and it's never directly, like, nobody looks at the carnival and goes, you killed this person. And ultimately, if they investigate, what they're going to find out is that the carnival, nobody knows how it is, exists or where it came from, but it has to have at least one soul every so often to keep going. And then they have this, where it's like, this is the one source of enjoyment that is in so many people's lives. Is it worth it?
Yeah, there's an interesting moral question there, because even though it's doing something terrible, if you look at it from a morally utilitarian standpoint, the net result of the carnival that you described is going to be more good than bad, even though the one bad is pretty freaking bad.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah, I would somehow bring up the question, like an NPC suggesting it, can we feed it our people on death row?
Yeah.
Are there other solutions?
There was also an episode of Enterprise that had a concept somewhat similar to this. It's what I started thinking about when you began describing it. There was a space station that would provide all of these services, would repair ships, would give you all kinds of stuff, but then would abduct one member of the crew from each ship that came through, because it was a distributed computing system that was using the brains of the individual crew members that would collect, both to increase its own processing power, but also to learn more about the technologies it was trying to fix, the services it was trying to provide.
Yeah, I think it was Trip that they took.
Yeah, I that's what I think, too. It's been a while since I've seen it, so I couldn't remember. But it just kind of reminded me of that a little bit.
Well, I did sort of, this is an inverse of a, basically it's an episode of Carnival where one of the people in the traveling circus has to stay behind in a ghost town that she gets killed and is, ends up living behind in the ghost town. But it's kind of the reverse of that was where I got the idea.
Huh. I like it. Doug, you're up.
Okay, so I came up with, someone built this entire carnival thing and they had all these different little acrobats and all this thing, like a typical carnival. And this guy also, he created this AI of a loved one that passed away. And so he's using this carnival to host organs and bodies. And he's trying to find the perfect specimen to put this AI in.
To replace the one person that he lost?
Yes.
Interesting. Like, I thought we were going with it was going to be that it was to entertain that one. And they needed other people, otherwise it wouldn't be fun for her.
I like that idea. That would be an interesting idea, too.
So the one that I came up with, actually, Wayne, is closer to what you just described, which I'm going to go post-nuke, or some kind of profoundly apocalyptic world. And before it all went to hell, whether this is nukes, whether this is Dark Sun, whatever apocalyptic world you want, before it all went to hell, there was an inventor that made the Clockwork Carnival as a way of entertaining someone that he really loved, to show them a side of life that they would not get to see. So here's joy in a joyless world, color in a colorless world, fun in a world where everything is so bleak, etc., etc. And years have gone by, and the person that created it is dead, and the person it was meant to entertain is dead. But this thing still goes on functioning, providing all of the resources and all of the value that it always did. And it's just running like a mindless machine. But now people around it are beginning to fight over it because of the fact that this thing is providing food, it's providing entertainment, it's providing who knows what else, medical services, any number of things you could put into these clockwork machines. And so it's an incredible value to anyone that possesses it, that you could choose to harvest it for its resources, simply benefit from its existence, maybe try and make a profit by putting guards around it and controlling who can and can't use it, and so use it for political leverage and whatnot.
You know, I didn't even think about that in my idea with the it coming to town, having those food booths for a setting that is, they're struggling for food.
Yeah.
I never even thought about that. That would be a really, you know, interesting part to add to it of when it comes around, they suddenly get to eat.
Well, and so I see two major conflicts here. Conflict one is, how do you take control of it without destroying it? Or do you destroy it to end these conflicts to get the world to move forward? Kind of like that old Star Trek episode where they were doing the simulated war and people would have to disintegrate themselves if they were considered casualties. They were like doing the sort of clean war. And so somebody looks at it and says, well, it's better this thing doesn't exist, so we stop fighting over it and instead find sustainable ways to move forward. Or maybe people say this is necessary. So you have the people fighting over it and how to use it, but you have to also be very careful, because in the process of fighting over it, if you damage it or destroy it, it may be out of everyone's reach to rehabilitate it. And so you have to be very careful in terms of not just how you view it, but also in terms of how you wage the conflict over it. And I think it would create some fun moral quandaries for the party to answer everything from should this place exist to if it does, who has it, or if it shouldn't exist, why should we destroy it, or should we dismantle it and disseminate the technology, or, you know, all these questions about whether it should exist, and if it does or doesn't exist, and what do you do with it?
I say, how, you have at least one session of people trying to figure out, how do we corral it into the same place so it stops moving from town to town?
Can
we trick it into staying
without
here?
Without damaging it. When it loads up the circus train and starts clockworking, which is now a verb for me, it starts clockworking its way to the next place. Are they going to do something to interfere with it? And does the clockwork mechanism have the programming to actually deal with this? But the idea is that there is no intellect behind it. It has now just become a force of nature, an environmental truth of the setting. And so it becomes very unintentionally purposeless and amoral.
Yeah, now I'm also envisioning clockwork security guards.
Clockwork ticket takers. They charge you clockwork $20 for a clockwork soda.
As long as I don't get a clockwork funnel cake and I can actually eat the funnel cake, I'm happy.
There you go. Since we got through that one so fast, we're going to do a second one. The second one is, there is a once in a century event, celestial events, like alignment of planets, eclipse. I don't care. It can be whatever you want. But there's a once in a century celestial event. And this time when it occurred, crystals began popping up in random places around the landscape. And no one's ever seen this before. If you're able to get a hold of one of the crystals, it will grant you enhanced abilities. Now, I'm not explaining what any of that means, because this is supposed to be a vague prompt. So let's go ahead and roll for initiative, and let's see what we go with our second one. Got an 11 this time.
I got a 12.
5. 9.
Okay, so Mary's up first, followed by me.
Okay, wow, we're rolling low today. Okay, so these crystals that start showing up across the landscape, the world is a relatively modern one. We know this is coming. We can predict the celestial occurrence. It's some sort of planetary syzygy or something. That's just a fun word, syzygy. And when people pick up these crystals, they get what are like superpowers. And it's very individual to somebody could get super strong, somebody could get fast healing, all your standard mutation powers. But what people don't realize is that the closer and closer to this event we get, the stronger and stronger these people who have the crystals become. Because these are not here randomly. These are a forebearer to whatever this celestial alignment is. It's not just an alignment of planets in our dimension, essentially. There is some greater alignment outside of this world that is taking place, and these crystals are power from another world, I will say, but I mean outside of our reality that is bleeding through to help sort of hopefully prepare Earth for something that is a much larger invasion coming with the opening of a gateway at the actual convergence event.
So it's kind of nice. Like you gain a dollar, but they gain 10.
Mm-hmm.
So taking those powers is something of a tainted gift, because by taking the powers, the people in the other dimension are getting powers.
Oh, that's I got out of this.
No. Okay, maybe I misunderstood.
It's preparing people for defending themselves when this opens.
Gotcha.
Yes, something extremely overwhelming and extremely powerful that nobody on Earth has ever seen the likes of before is
so
coming.
The idea is to prepare people to defend against it.
To hopefully give them a fighting chance.
Okay.
Who or what caused that sort of precursor, these crystals, to give you a chance? I don't know. Maybe that's part of the game, but yeah.
I think for mine, since I'm second in the order, I'm going to go with the one that I actually thought was yours, because apparently my brain just invented it ex nihilo, so let's run with it. But I'm going to go with, there are these crystals that pop up, but what's going on is something of a currency that exists at the cosmic level, where a crystal pops up, and if I grab it, I get, similar to yours, some random X-Men power, right? Whatever it may be, just roll off of a palladium style chart, and that's what you get. Super speed, super strength, whatever. But when you gain that, now you do get a bigger ability to fight some threat, but the empowerment of humanity does something in some weird, abstract, mathematical sort of level. And I would need some time to develop this mentally to really get a cogent story. But the gist of the story would be that if you grab it, you get super strength, but over on their side, they're getting something much bigger.
It's like there's an inverse power conversion.
Yes.
Where you get stronger, but they get orders of magnitude stronger than you get.
Precisely. That you go up one rung on the ladder, but to do that, a ladder has to come into existence that they know how to fully climb. And so the story here is going to be one about trying to determine, could we take this threat better if we had these powers, but they're going to be more powerful now? Or would it be better to just try and stop that level of human greed and the temptation of that power, because we would stand a much better chance against this threat if they didn't get the $10 for every $1 we got? So I'm going to go with something that's a bit more kind of science fiction sort of thing, that people have to look at this and evaluate it. Maybe even only a small number of people even figure out what the truth is. And by that point, some of these have been consumed, or maybe someone's hiding the truth about what they are, or whatever. It's like bait on a hook. Mm. You know, the fish gets the worm, but you get the fish. And so it's that sort of thing. You grab one of these, you get a little, but for every little you get, they get a lot. And there's a struggle then of how to sort that out.
Or how do they even want you to know? Are you just a battery for them to get more powerful while they attack other things?
And we could go farther with that of maybe they've got spies within our society posing as humanity or posing as humans, trying to drive certain factions or create certain conflicts, even create outright wars within humanity to drive people into taking these powers, or they push a meteor into the Earth that makes it hard to survive or whatever, to try and make it even more appealing and harder to say no. And then when a scientist starts to figure it out, suddenly he shows up floating down the Danube butt up, or whatever the case is. Yeah, I was guessing you would catch that reference. So that's the sort of thing I've got in mind for this. Who is next on our initiative?
I am.
Waynard. All right, Wayne.
Okay. So this alignment happens. These crystals appear all over the world. People start finding them, start getting powers. You have to keep them with them initially, but the more they use the powers, the more the crystal kind of shrinks and absorbs into them, and it becomes a permanent thing. You start to have regular people that are just trying to make money off of it. You have superheroes, you have supervillains, all of this start to develop. You have government agencies looking into it. Our give here, though, these crystals are actually alien beings. When they fully absorb, they take over the mind of the individuals. This is an invasion, and the people using the powers don't realize that. They slowly, over time, their personalities start to change until eventually their personality is completely pushed down and the new one is there. Now, the players are a combination of people that are for the government agency that know about this, have figured it out.
Yeah.
But they have to ask the question, can we take these people on without powers of our own? Can we use it just a little, but not let it fully merge? And the more they use them, the more it starts impacting them. But they have to stop an alien invasion that is happening because of this.
So they're invading not physically, but mentally.
Yes.
So you grab one, you get the powers of Superman, but your mind starts slowly changing until eventually you aren't you anymore.
Exactly.
And maybe it happens slowly enough that if someone doesn't know you very intimately, they don't know what caused the change or understand even how these powers work or whatnot.
So initially the campaign would start off as a typical superhero campaign, but the players know that it's not. And they have to ask that question, how much do I use my powers? Because as a GM, I'm tracking every time they use powers, because every time they use their powers, it's impacting them as well.
Would they be able, like, is it an individual mind, the alien mind, yes, to an individual crystal? So if you started juggling crystals, could you avoid too much influence from any one alien?
No, because it bonds with you once you touch it.
Oh.
I also had the idea that some of the crystals, at least one, because how do they find out about this?
Mm-hmm.
One of them wants to stop the invasion, but to do it, it invaded.
Okay.
One of the players even could be that person, or that could be an NPC that is telling them about it. The aliens have a traitor in their midst that is trying to help humanity not get taken over, but to do it, it did what it didn't want to do.
Yeah.
It had to take over somebody to be able to be heard, basically, to inform everybody.
That reminds me, there's a couple of characters in the old miniseries V that were like that, where the aliens were invading Earth, and a handful of aliens joined this invasion with the intention of derailing it. Now, obviously, this is a very different sort of story because V was an invasion looking for resources, whereas this is an invasion of the mind, not a physical body-to-body, corpus-to-corpus sort of war, but it's instead a fight for control of the ultimate resource, which is us.
People.
And I love the moral questions of, you know, if one of them is playing that, how do they feel about the fact they had to do what they're trying to stop their people from doing?
Yeah. Well,
there's also a lot of things to explore, like, is this a permanent thing? Is your personality still there underneath the alien? Is there a way to extract that invasive force and return a person to normal? Or are they gone? Is this an invasion of the body snatchers? Or is it something more?
Yeah, and as a GM, I wouldn't give the players the answer right away.
Right, right.
That would be something they would have to discover.
I did like your solution to this, Barry. Grab a second one, and now suddenly Bob the alien and Carl the alien are both fighting for your body.
Yeah.
Well, and it creates kind of a stalemate between the two.
Yeah, and that's why I went with the idea of once you touch one, you're bonded with that one.
So you can't, grabbing a second one, now you're just holding a rock. It doesn't melt into your hand and become part of you.
Nope, because I had that same thought of you could then just trade them and...
Yeah,
you would never let one have more influence than you can control.
It'd be like having some kind of who wants to buy a Rolex coat of one of each of the Green Lantern or the Lantern Rings, you know. But, well, today I need a White Lantern power. Now I need a Blue Lantern power.
And yesterday I used the Blue Lantern already. So let's go to the Indigo because it's close enough, but it's not the same one. Just avoid a little. Yeah.
So you look like the pimp of the Lantern Corps with a 3 rings on each finger.
Yeah, I like playing with that idea of how much are you willing to sacrifice of yourself to stop this?
Yeah. All right, Doug?
Mine's kind of similar. So the planets all align and the celestial event occurs. and it triggers an end of the world type scenario. So the gods send these crystals down to help the people, and these shards are meant to help stop it and help humanity and all that stuff. And the thing is, the longer they have that shard, the more it corrupts them and makes them power hungry. So the players have to go around and find these shards and then maybe convince these people to either give them up, and then what to do afterwards once they give them up, if they actually do.
So it's almost like the Rings of Power from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Like the one ring is, you know, this great weapon that's going to give us all the power, except for the fact that you're going to lose your mind in the process, or at least change your personality, go down a... So if you take one, your alignment shifts toward another alignment, I guess, to use the nice D&D type metaphor. Yeah,
but it's still playing with that idea of something horrible is coming, so you need to have some people right. using them, mm-hmm. at least for a while.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting concept behind the role-playing game Necessary Evil, yep. that maybe the bad guys aren't the worst thing out there anymore, that maybe you kind of need them to stop something worse that...
Yeah, it reminded me a little bit of Better Angels as well.
Yeah.
Where everybody has essentially like a demon inside of them and is trying to do good because the demon inside you wants to do evil.
Yeah.
Sure, you could give it up and it goes to somebody else, but are they going to be as good as you are with it?
Yeah. Or are you going to agree to accept some of its gifts to do something that may be good in the short term, but in the long term is... creating a much worse situation.
Yeah, and I know that in that game they do have a system where the more power you take, the more influence you give.
Yeah, I've noticed across pretty much all 8 of the suggestions we gave here that one of the things all of us seem to like is quandary. The fact that these are difficult choices. For example, with the crystals, none of us said, oh, yeah, these things are just outright evil. We have to collect and destroy them all. Or they're purely good, and it's just a race to see who can get the most of them. We're all trying to create these situations where it's a double-edged sword, where it's providing some good and also some evil. There's a meaningful temptation there, but also a meaningful problem. And the question is, how do you solve that? Trying to get whatever it is to you seems like the best good out of it without falling into its worst natures, because we real easily could have made this something where the crystals are just pure good or pure evil, or the carnival is pure good or pure evil. And even if most of the people don't know what's going on, the party knows what's up and is trying to get this to go in the obviously correct direction.
Yeah, we could have gone the route of these are just things that give people powers, and it's up to the person if they're good or evil. And we didn't go that route either.
Yeah,
in that regard, it kind of, I realize I'm all over the place with my references tonight, but it reminded me of Command and Conquer with Tiberium, that the crystals show up and they collate and offer this incredible wealth of concentrated resources, and to harvest them is to vastly enhance your wealth and your industrial and economic power. So it's kind of neutral, and there's an alien intelligence that follows it around and is attracted to it. But what's occurring is in many ways just a sort of force of nature, and none of us went that route. We all went with moral quandary.
My backup idea was a alien race doing it as a test, see what humanity does with it, and uses that to judge them by, to determine whether they destroy the planet or not.
Yeah, to basically say, you know what, we're tired of you guys kind of riding the line, let's just go ahead and get it done with. One of the ones I considered that I didn't go with is, are you guys familiar with the concept of the Great Filter? The idea that civilizations theoretically might build up and up and up, but there's some great filtering event that might keep most civilizations from reaching a higher level.
Yep. Could be the invention of the nuclear bomb. It could be a number of solar events that happen.
Precisely. A meteor striking the planet, any number of things. It was originally proposed as a solution to what's called the Fermi paradox. which is if we have this vast universe and if we have all these places where life could appear, why are we not finding it anywhere? And one of the proposed answers to that is there's something called the Great Filter that says that when a race reaches a certain point, that they fall to predators or they destroy themselves.
There's a Tower of Babel-esque event that prevents further growth.
Or annihilates the species completely. And one of the stories I had considered was maybe these were purely beneficial because some species that had made it past the Great Filter was alone in the universe and wanted to see younger races make it past the Great Filter. And so the idea was, well, we're going to give you this power, which will be sufficient for you to create Superman and Batman and get past the Great Filter. But if you're morally repugnant, it may also create something horrific or take out the, or bring out rather, the worst attributes of your species and you destroy yourself, which if that's your inclination, it's better you don't exist anyway. And so it's a way of kind of putting all the chips on the Great Filter and saying your species is going to survive or not, depending on how you respond to this. It's not morally loaded. It's just a neutral offering. There's a terrible predator. Here's a saber-toothed tiger. I'm going to give you a rifle. Are you going to shoot the saber-toothed tiger or the dude next to you? If you shoot the saber-toothed tiger, you now made it past the Great Filter and get to join our civilization and its wonderful utopian future or something like that, which is a little bit less morally complicated. I mean, there's still a moral dimension to it. But I just find it interesting that we as a group are gravitating toward very, I wouldn't say similar stories, but a similar theme or a similar weight to these stories.
I think part of it is you could tell a lot of interesting stories with all the different ways you can go with this, but only some of them make good role-playing games.
Yeah. No, and I agree. I agree.
If you're just writing a novel or doing fiction, then some of the other ideas could be really interesting. But I think at the table, making it be questioning brings something more out of the players.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. Is I think to some extent, it's just the nature of the group and birds of a feather flock together and all. So, of course, we have a similar style and taste in games, but it creates a much more interesting situation for the players to work through because it's not so simple. And also, I think some of these really simple stories of good and evil, they can be compelling stories, but they're stories that have already been told. Yep.
And they're more compelling if you control all the characters, and you don't control all the characters as a GM.
Yeah, precisely. But if you look at something like V, which I referenced because some of these stories reminded me a bit of V, but it was a much more black and white situation. Yes, there were some aliens that were good in trying to stop this, but overall their presence was evil and humanity was, once again, it had its evil people, but humanity as a whole was neutral to good and needed to get rid of them before they destroyed our planet completely. So it's these stories have been told many times over. Not that they're not compelling, it's just, where's the challenge in trying to come up with a plot for that in one of these exercises?
Or be an interesting character within it as a player.
Yeah.
There's a lot more for a player to
wrestle with.
Yeah. Or just engage with in a story that has more grayness and or quandary to it.
Yeah, and it also forces the players, if there are more than one of them, to either compete with each other, cooperate with each other, or compromise with each other, if you'll excuse my alliteration, to come up with some kind of an ultimate answer to the question in front of them.
Plus, if you're the GM, it's keeping your players from munchkining the best powers.
Yes.
Because if they use them,
then
it is twisting them.
Exactly, yeah. Just somebody runs straight for the Shazam stone or whatever, because there's going to be a price to that. So, all right, I think that's where we're going to wrap this one up. But as always, have a good week and great games, and we will catch you next time.